Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Mags Morrissey.
Hello and you're very welcome to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I am Frances Nesbitt from Crowan Cottages here in Kilkenny and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey from Hedgehog Bakery. And we're live today, Friday, from 4 to 5 and the show is repeated on Mondays from 4 to 5. While we're here in the studio and on air, we'd love to hear from you, so please feel free to send us in any questions or comments that you might have during the show. Easiest way to get in touch is by text to 086-353-7782, 086-353-7782, or you can email us at any stage during the week, kitchengarden@crkc.ie. Now, on the show today, you might have heard in the news lots of stories about the decline in insect numbers, and of course that's a very serious topic for us all because they're a very important rung in the food chain, or link in the food chain. So today we're going to focus on that in the show. We're going to be talking a little bit about food and food news, but then we're going to be joined by Jane Stout from TCD and talk to her about her work on tracking biodiversity and about the decline in insect numbers and to see what plans are afoot, if any, to tackle that problem. And then later in the show, the Mid Kilkenny Beekeepers Association, they've got an upcoming course on an introduction to beekeeping. And of course, the bees are as important as all of the rest of the insects and pollinators, and so it might be of use to you to go along to that course or to hear what he has to say about how to keep bees. Mags, how are you?
Good, very good.
Loads to talk about today.
Loads to talk about, yeah. I've had a very busy week, actually.
Oh, really? As well?
Well, just, yeah, lots of things going on. So, I was in the Green Barn last Saturday.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lovely spot. And Dermot Carey, who was in a couple of months ago and stuff, he was around, so he gave us a guided tour before we had lunch and that. So we got to see all the gardens and got to see a lot of the kind of behind-the-scenes bits. So
I love the behind-the-scenes
tours. We got
to see
where the kale was growing before we ate it for our lunch. But yeah, it's a beautiful place, actually. And it's really close to here, so it's quite handy.
Just across the border in County Kildare.
Kildare, yeah. It's only a few minutes from Mathai. So well worth a detour, actually, and run by really nice people. There's a wall of the restaurant. It's a new build, but it's a very simple kind of structure. But then the interior is quite carefully thought out and very effective and very lovely, actually. And what the nice, I think, well, one of the nicest parts of it was that the kitchen is looking out over the garden, so the chefs are working away and they can actually see the garden. I'm sure there's many a chef spends its day in, like, just between walls and doesn't have a view of a nice, beautiful
box,
garden.
There's no windows at all, yeah.
Yeah, so, but there's one of the walls there. They have James Fennell was the photographer, and Turtle Bunbury was the historian who did a collection of Vanishing Ireland. So it was a collection of photographs of people from older people from around Ireland. So they have a whole wall dedicated to that. And there's lovely portraits of all of these guys who were on it. And it's just really nice, actually.
They're constantly changing the place, James and his wife down there. So they've put in a bit of a gallery I saw on social media. And she's an interior designer.
She's an interior designer, yeah.
So there's some very stylish.
You can buy some artwork and bits and pieces of really nice things, actually. And yeah, so there's a little gallery room off the kind of reception area. But yeah, it's a really nice, relaxed kind of place to have lunch, actually. And the food is fab, actually. Nicest food I've had for quite a while. So yeah, well worth a visit. I think it's open, is it Wednesday to Sunday? And just a really nice place to sit. You can, like, we had a lovely table looking out over the garden, and I actually had to put sunglasses on at one point because the sun was shining so much. So yeah, great, great Saturday afternoon sort of business. And very, Dermot was really delighted to show us around and really generous in his time, so that was nice as well.
Beautiful gardens, like, immaculately kept.
Yeah.
He does a lovely job down there.
And
you can actually pay for a tour of the gardens or for a wander of the gardens without even going in for lunch. I think it's a fiver to visit the gardens.
Okay.
Well worth doing.
There was loads of snowdrops and some really nice design features, actually, in the garden, apart from the vegetable growing part in the flower garden and that. So really nice, actually.
But even the veg growing part is very pretty.
Oh, it's very pretty. Yeah, it is. I have to say, I had steak. There was a bean steak thing that Dermot had made or he'd gotten made that you could lift and then move every year. It was really cool, actually. I had envy at that, which was quite clever.
Did you get a photo of that?
I did, actually.
Oh, very good. You must show that to me.
Yeah. It was carefully constructed so that it's easy, like two people could lift it.
Yeah.
It was quite big in that. But that was clever, actually. A few things like that.
They do need support, do the old beans.
They do need a lot of support, yeah. And then he had a different one for peas. It was pretty cool, actually.
I look forward to seeing that.
Yeah. And then I've had a mad busy week with the woofer. My super
the woofer has landed.
French woofer. Yeah, well, she's about to leave again. But she's done great work. It's amazing how much work you can get done with two people. It's more than twice.
It is.
You know, even if I get distracted and I have to go off and do something, she finishes whatever we're, you know, and you come back and things are done. It's like, whoa, great. So, she deserves a few drinks this weekend, actually, after all her work. So,
And is she going to stick around then in Kilkenny to kind of see the city and stuff after you've been working her all
week? She's
done
bits and pieces. Like, I've brought her in on Wednesday night for a few hours. So I was doing something and she went off about her own business. And she's very independent, so she doesn't need too much minding. Just drop her somewhere and she'll find her way. So she messaged me later then to say she was in some pub with some great music and she was happy and take your time. So
you're a great advertisement for the old woofing movement. You've been lucky, touch wood and all of that. Yeah. You've been very lucky.
Yeah, but I'm trying to line. I have actually lined up somebody else to come because, like, we did great work this week between us. But now I'm kind of going, okay, that's that bit done. Now we've another project. Yeah, you know? So it's a great way to get work done.
It
super
really
way.
Is.
And she's minding puppies as well for me. She's pretty good, actually. So, and she asks no questions, which is the way I like them.
That's the spirit. That is the spirit. Is she not here to learn? No.
Well, she's learning as she goes, but she's just, I actually was thinking, if my children turned out as kind of happy in their own skin as she seems to be, I'd be quite happy because she's very relaxed. She kind of rolls in, does her own thing, you know, nice way to be. But I did cook her an Irish stew.
Oh, right, okay.
Which I actually haven't cooked myself for quite a while. So bought some very nice lamb in Prendergast in Thomastown and leeks, potatoes, carrots, garlic and stock and lots of parsley, pepper and salt. And it was actually absolutely delicious. She was impressed.
I love an Irish stew, but everybody you talk to has their own recipe or a variation thereon. Hard to find a bad one, really. I can't remember ever having a bad stew. It's a lovely, forgiving kind of dish.
It is, yeah. Mm. Yeah, cook it slowly and for a while, and yeah, it is. It does need lots of parsley, though, I always think.
Right. My mother wouldn't have put any parsley in her Irish stew
and
now.
Liked it.
And I did like my mammy's stew, but of course,
we all
like
different techniques.
Different techniques.
I do fry the meat just really for a couple of minutes beforehand, which I know some people wouldn't do.
I would always do that. In seasoned flour, I'd always do that.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't use flour actually, but so that was her little treat.
You fed her the once and she
worked.
And I
made a fabulous Valentine's cake yesterday. So yeah, she did okay. And she had it for breakfast again this morning.
A Valentine's cake?
Valentine's cake.
She for breakfast?
Up. Yeah, she got up and she didn't actually say a word. She just sat down, big slice of cake. She's my kind of girl.
Sounds like an ideal guest or woofer for you.
So
you got loads of work done in the garden, was it?
Yeah.
And what are you kind of preparing in the garden now at this time of the year?
This was the orchard, actually. So we've kind of transformed the orchard. So there was a couple of blackcurrant bushes. I don't even know how many were there, to be honest, because it was so overgrown and you couldn't get into the middle of them or the back of them. And there was a hedge growing over part of it and that. So that was how I started, actually. Cut all of that back and then kind of got a bit carried away, actually. And there was a lovely old stone wall. I knew there was a stone wall in there, but you couldn't really see it. And there was a couple of gooseberry bushes. So cleaned around those and then decided just to clean the whole thing, actually. So there's a lot of ivy on the top of it, but couldn't take all the ivy off because I was afraid the wall might actually come.
Yeah.
But just cleaned it all back. And now I'm going to actually plant. This is my one thing for nature, actually, this year. Going to plant some kind of bee-friendly plants along it. But now have a really, really nice exposed stone wall that's not just going to be actually on the ground.
Falling apart. Well, yeah, the ivy at this stage may be holding the wall apart, but of course, as it grows in among the rocks in the wall, it'll dislodge them.
Yeah, it will. It will. And, you know, I was thinking, I left one tree with ivy on it, and we did cut a tree out of it as well, but left some trees. And so there's loads of ivy, and where the bees are, there's piles of ivy. So in balance, I think it's okay. We'll put in some new planting. And then I found some kind of... some little flowers and stuff growing along the base that wouldn't have gotten a chance if I just left it the way it was. So
sounds like it might have been planted up at one point in the past.
It was planted up, yeah, but I'd say it hadn't been touched in, well, I'm there 6 years, like it could have been 10-12 years and stuff. So there was brambles, an awful lot of brambles and stuff, and stuff grown all over the place. So the orchard looks nearly twice its size now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it looks good, actually. So, yeah, that was good. So that was great work done this week.
And I saw a photograph of you found an old tractor seat with a tree growing through it now. I love stuff like
that. One of those really old tractor seeds, probably from like a Massey Ferguson or something like that, I don't know.
One of the original Fergusons, I'd
maybe,
say.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, one so of the cast iron seat.
Yeah, so obviously it was just left dumped beside the wall, probably. And... is it an ash tree? I think it was, actually. Just literally grew up through it. So we've kept that.
That's a feature now.
It's a feature. It's just sitting there.
And it's growing through the gaps in the seat. I loved that photograph. Like nature kind of colonising a piece of civilization again. Nice,
but it's
to
nice
see.
That the seat is kind of still sitting up properly.
Still
in
upright,
so, So that was some of my week.
Very good. Well, loads in food news this week as well. I don't know whether you saw any of the... lots of coverage in the press. The insects got an awful lot of coverage.
Yes.
Like a drop in insect populations of 80%, up to 80%. Like, it's just incredible.
So that study was done in between kind of China and Australia.
Yeah.
They were the two researchers and that. So
but even over here, our numbers are way, way down. And just speaking anecdotally to people about this, the kind of comparison I use is when we were kids and you'd go for a drive in the car and the windscreen would be covered in insects as you hit them driving down the road. And now that rarely happens. Mm. You know, rarely happens. Mm. But anyway, we'll talk to Jane Stout a little later on about that. I did see an interesting story out of France. They've brought in a new law over there, the Egalim Law. And it's being reported here now that this Egalim Law is supposedly to prevent supermarkets and so on from selling below the amount that they're buying for food items.
Below cost selling.
Yeah, below cost selling. And that came into effect on the 2nd of December. It began to be implemented on the 1st of February. And one of the new constraints is that products must be sold to retailers at a minimum of 10% above the loss selling threshold. So this isn't just that the supermarkets can't sell below cost. The producers can't sell to the supermarkets below the cost of their production. Mm. Now, when you think about it, you'd wonder why a producer would ever do that.
Well,
but it's often because they're put under pressure by the supermarket to do that.
I think mostly.
Yeah, mostly. Yeah. So it's as a kind of like a hello into a supermarket, or as a special around a certain time of the year, or if it's getting towards the end of a season, a producer might be put under pressure to sell the remains of their kind of produce below cost. But now they can rely on this law to prevent that.
Did that law come from Europe, I wonder?
No, it's a French invention. Yeah, it's a French invention. So now, that all sounds very noble, and it's fantastic that the producers, the small producers, are being protected. But there is a knock-on effect. And one of the knock-on effects is that it's expected that there will be a 1.3% rise in the recommended retail price of some food and beverages in the supermarkets. So the supermarkets will protect their margin.
Yeah.
If they have to pay more to the producer, then they'll put up their prices accordingly. Now, if you ask me, a 1% increase in the cost of your basket of goods, if you buy fresh fruit and vegetables and so on, to protect the livelihoods of the people who produce it, I'm all for that.
Yeah, it doesn't.
I would
sound
gladly
very much,
like €1 in every 100. It's incredible the difference it would make, and it did remind me of some figures that I'd seen in the past about if a penny was added on to the price of a pint of milk, the difference it would make annually to the farmer who keeps the cows is phenomenal. And we wouldn't really notice it.
No, we wouldn't notice it at all.
So I think the supermarkets are often caught up in a kind of war of, you know, having the cheapest basket of goods, you know, the comparison that's done there, and they like to take their turns at winning that. And so there is constant pressure to keep prices down while they have to make money. And while they make money, it's the producers, I think, that suffer. So a very interesting law, and it'll be one to see how to keep an eye on and see how that works.
It will be
interesting,
actually, to see what happens with that,
And then just another reminder, while we're talking about biodiversity and insect numbers and so on today, just a reminder that the National Biodiversity Data Centre have their spring and summer workshop programme, and details of all of the workshops are on biodiversityireland.ie/events. So biodiversityireland.ie/events, and there are some lovely events on there and workshops on there for nature lovers. Now, we better take an ad break, and then coming up after the ads, we're going to be talking to Jane Stout of TCD about her work with the National Pollinator Plan and monitoring insects, and she's a very varied career. So we'll be talking to her just after the break. Text us on 086 353 7782.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're very welcome back to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I'm Francis Nesbitt, and I'm joined as usual here by Mags Morrissey. And we're live today, Friday, from 4 to 5. And you can send us in any questions or comments you have by text to 086 353 7782, or you can email kitchengarden@ckc.ie at any stage during the week. Now, there's widespread concern about the drop in pollinator and other insect numbers across the globe, and we're going to be speaking now to a lady called Jane Stout from TCD, who is an expert in the field of ecology, and she looks in particular at the human impacts on biodiversity and ecosystems, and she also looks at the consequences of changes in land management and non-native species invasions. Jane, how are you?
Good afternoon, how are you? I'm good, thank you.
Great. Thanks a million for joining us on the show.
No problem.
Reading through your bio online, Jane, it sounds like you have a fascinating job.
I do, yes. If you like insects, which a lot of people don't.
But not only do you do all of that work that I described, you're also the chair of the Irish Forum on Natural Capital, and you're the deputy chair of the All-Ireland Pollinator Plan, something that we talk about a lot on the show here.
Absolutely, yeah. Oh, I'm delighted. You're well into the Pollinator Plan.
We've spoken to several people on the show about it, and always with an eye on providing an environment suitable for our insects, and then if we provide the environment that's suitable for them, I think they do the rest of the work themselves, don't they?
Absolutely, that's right. Yeah, if we look out for them, they'll look after us.
Now, Jane, one reason we wanted to talk to you was this report that was in a lot of news outlets during the week about, the headline was quite grabbing, 80% drop in insect populations. Can you tell us a little bit about what was going on there?
Yeah, so the report was a global review, so it wasn't collecting any new data, it was reviewing studies that had already been published, and I suppose, you know, the dramatic headlines came from their findings about decreases in the abundance of insects and also declines in species. So I think they came out with an overall 41% decline in insect species. Now, given there's a million different species of insects on the planet, you know, compared to, what is it, about 5,000 mammal species, you know, it's an incredibly massive and diverse group of animals. For 41% of them to be in decline is a bit of a shock. Mm. I think the other thing that the review really highlighted was how little we know about most of those million insects. Most of the data come from a very few insect groups that people are interested in. So, you know, butterflies, because they look nice. Bees have had an awful lot of attention in the last few years. So the kind of the aesthetic or the attractive insects have had more attention. But most of those insects, most of our diversity, we just don't know nearly enough about it. But the trends are incredibly worrying.
We are kind of spoiled in this part of the world because of the gentlemen naturalists of the 18th and 19th century who studied all around them here in the British Isles and in France and places like that. So we feel that we kind of know everything, and there are books there to describe our insects. But in other parts of the world, some of which have far more kind of variation, as you say, they haven't really, we haven't even had a chance to study some of the populations
absolutely.
That are declining.
I mean, it's, you know, there's been a million species of insects have been named, but that's thought to be a fraction of what's actually out there. And even here in Ireland, we have 11,000 species of insect. Most of them we don't know anything about. Even our bees, we've got 100 species of bee. When we did the exercise to look at, you know, the threat status, you know, to officially examine how threatened our bees were, an awful lot of those species we didn't know enough about in order to be able to say whether they were threatened or not. So even though we've got good data relatively in this part of the world, we still don't know nearly enough. And absolutely, you're right, you know, you put up a trap in the middle of a rainforest somewhere in the tropics, you're going to catch a whole bunch of new species that have never been recognized before by science. And the worry is that we're destroying habitats and those species are disappearing before we've ever had a chance to even get to know them. So that's, yeah, it is very concerning. And I think the other thing to note from this study was that not only do we not know a lot about an awful lot of insect taxa, but it's not all insects that are in decline. So some species that are very ecologically adaptable, that can cope with the way that we treat the planet, are going to be okay. So I think the talk of insects being completely extinct by the end of this century is possibly over-sensationalised, but they are in trouble. I think that's the bottom line.
As with all of these things, though, the devil is in the detail, and while some numbers of or some species might be doing particularly well, you have to look at what those insects are, and from a kind of selfish point of view, what do they do for us, and are if they've any use to us? And then you look at the ones that are in decline, and sadly, it seems to be most of the valuable insects for the general ecosystem are in decline.
Yeah, and you know, as I tell my entomology students, the students that study insects here in Trinity, you know, the first thing I say to them is most people don't like insects. And that's because there's a handful of species that are given the rest of the hundreds of thousands of species a really bad rep. And, you know, it's only a tiny fraction of species that are pests or are, you know, unpleasant house flies, cockroaches, you know, those kind of really resilient and tough insects we don't like. But an awful lot of the others that we don't know so much about and we don't know what they're doing, you know, are doing us favours or aren't having any impact on us at all, but are helping, you know, the ecosystems to function properly. And insects are amazing because they're so diverse. You find them on every kind of habitat, terrestrial habitat on Earth, so every piece of land on Earth, you know, apart from perhaps the middle of the Antarctic, has got insects on it, and they fill an awful lot of different ecological roles. So they're in the soil, they're turning soil over, they're helping to cycle nutrients in the soil, they're acting as herbivores, so they're feeding on plants, they're controlling plant populations. Others are predators or parasites, and they're keeping other populations under control, and insects form the diet for an awful lot of animals that people do like and do care about, like farmland birds, for example. So, you know, I think we need to sort of shift our thinking about insects as being something awful that we need to get rid of and start to appreciate the good things that they do for us.
Looking closer to home then, Jane, how are we doing in Ireland on our diversity of insects and on the numbers?
It's hard to tell. You know, even though we do have relatively good data, we still don't know for most insects. So of our 11,000 insect species in Ireland, only 1,000 of them have been assessed to find out whether they're in decline. And the group that I know the best, the bees, you know, our 100 species of bees, 50% of those species are in decline, and 30% of them are officially threatened with extinction.
Good Lord.
If we assume that the bees are an indicator of other species, then yeah, they're doing not great.
Now we have to ask why. What's happening, Jane?
Yeah, so it's a combination of factors. So it's the loss and destruction of habitats, so losing places for them to live. It's also as a result of decades of the way that we try to get rid of insects. You know, we don't want them there. We don't want them in our fields of crops. We don't want them in our homes. We don't want them in our cities. So we've actively tried to get rid of them for decades. And, you know, the very intensive way that some farming, you know, modern food production can be incredibly intensive, that can be very, very damaging to insects. Pile on top of that things like climate change, things like increasing globalization and travel means increasing distribution of diseases, so diseases that affect insects. And all of these factors contribute to this decline? I think in the paper that you mentioned at the beginning, it was pesticides and climate change that they concluded were the two biggest drivers.
And in Ireland, I know there's lots of talk of pesticides having kind of knock-on effects with travelling insects, like, for example, bees that you mentioned, bringing some of the poisons back and, you know, infecting some of their, or poisoning some of their friends in the hive, if you like. So we're having kind of knock-on effects from some of the way that we're treating crops, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And the problem is, you know, a lot of the pesticides that are used don't just stay within the crop fields. They don't just, you know, get the target organisms, but they affect non-target organisms, and they also, they don't, you know, they leach out of the fields. So some of these insecticides have leached out from the cropping system into waterways, into hedgerow plants, and then they can affect non-target organisms, you know, beneficial organisms, the pollinators, the natural enemies of the crop pests, and also, you know, other organisms that are, you know, just getting on with their business. The problem with a lot of the agrochemicals is they're not contained. They don't stay within the crop field. And this sterilization of the crop field and this reliance on chemicals in our food production systems has contributed to this decline and this loss.
Now, you were talking about the insects getting on with their business, and that brings us nicely on to, I think, the work that you do as part of the Forum on Natural Capital. Mm-hmm. Do you want to tell listeners what that forum is all about and what is natural capital?
Yeah, so natural capital, it's a way of looking at nature. Instead of thinking about nature as something that can just be exploited, if we start to think about nature as our asset, and in business terms, if you've got an asset or, you know, a stock of assets, you make your livelihood from the flow of benefits that comes from that stock. And we can think in the same way about nature. So the natural environment, the living environment, the non-living, you know, the water, the soil, this is our stock from which flow these benefits, these goods and services, so like food and fuel, but also things like sequestration of carbon, pollination services, and they're also more things to do with human well-being, so cultural services and landscape. So all of these come from this stock of natural capital, and if we erode that stock, then the flow of benefits, the flow of services also diminishes. Mm-hmm. And the idea about thinking about this in sort of economic and business terms is that we need to understand what that stock is and what those flows are. We need to understand what our impacts and dependencies are. And if we can bring nature into business models and into economic models, then it becomes part of the decision-making process, whereas at the moment it's invisible in business decisions and economic decisions. So if we can start to think about nature in a different way and bring it into our everyday decision-making at every level, individuals, businesses, governments, all the way up, then we can start to understand the real value of nature. And it's not all about putting a price tag on. It's not all about commodifying nature. It's about understanding its value, all of its values, and incorporating them into our everyday lives.
So the health of the soil has an impact on the quantity and quality of the produce that we get from the field.
Absolutely.
So if we look after the quality of the soil, it counts as an input cost, if you like, which results in greater benefits at harvest time.
Yeah, and not just at harvest time, but also in terms of carbon sequestration and nutrient cycling. You know, maybe you need to reduce the amount of artificial fertilizers that are added to the soil can help with attenuating floodwaters and erosion and leaching from farms. So there's lots and lots of benefits that come from the land, not just the harvestable products. So if we start to recognize all those other benefits, we can start to, you know, account for them properly.
And in some areas of horticulture especially, things like this are already considered. So if you grow tomatoes in a very large polytunnel or in a greenhouse, the flowers on the tomato plants need to be pollinated. So you're going to bring in batches of bumblebees to do that work for you. So you know that you might hire people.
You already
people.
Know they're an input.
Exactly, yeah. You hire people to harvest the fruit, but you need insects to do the pollination at the start.
That's right, that's right. And so it's just, it's sort of bringing that concept to the outside. So if you're growing apples in an orchard, you know that your apple flowers need to be pollinated in order to produce apples. So you need to think about that as part of your inputs. And if you think as well, not just about the pollinators, but about the natural enemies, the predators in the crop system that will stop other creatures from becoming pests and causing damage to your yields, you know, you can start to think about the whole thing, you know, think about the whole cycle. And I think, you know, as an ecologist, we understand about nature it doesn't waste, it's a cyclical thing. So we need to start bringing that into our thinking in all our businesses, not just in food production.
Jane, there's so much that we could talk about on this, but before we let you go, I have to ask, is there anything that we can do? Is there any recommendations for farmers or even for gardeners? Is there anything that we can do to help?
Absolutely. So, I mean, you mentioned the All Ireland Pollinator Plan. That would be the first port of call, www.pollinators.ie. All the resources for the Pollinator Plan are there. And a lot of the things that we're recommending to benefit pollinators, whether you're a gardener or a grower or a small business, there's lots of advice in there. And lots of those things that will help pollinators will also help in a lot of other ways as well. So I often think of pollinators as being, you know, the flagship. Bees are the ones that people are prepared to do something about. But in helping them, we also help all these other possibly less attractive organisms that are also doing useful things for us.
My son asked me recently, what are midges for and why are they of any use? Because he suffers terribly.
Eat the bats.
Exactly. That's exactly what I said. He suffers terribly with bites, Charlie. But they have a use as well.
Some insects do cause problems, but, you know, the vast majority of them don't. I suppose that's my message.
Great stuff.
Can I ask one question, actually, Jane, before you go?
Sure.
Like, we all know that we can do small things in the garden and that, but I suppose at this level of damage, we need it kind of coming from government, and policy probably needs to be changed, does it not,
to actually make a proper
impact?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a National Biodiversity Strategy, the National Biodiversity Action Plan, and that lays out really clearly what we need to do. So we just need to make sure that that happens. And one of the key things is to make sure that everybody is doing something and that it is integrated into decision making across the board. You know, there's not a single individual, there's not a single company that can say, oh yeah, nature doesn't matter to me. But at the moment, that's the thinking. So we need to get it out there at all levels, and we need to change the way the industrialized agriculture, we need to change the way we're producing food. And absolutely, we need to see some large scale changes. From top down and bottom up.
Well, let's hope they happen. Jane Stout, thank you very much for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Jane Stout, ecologist in the Department of Botany in TCD. And those web addresses again, it's pollinators.ie for the National Pollinator Plan, or the All-Ireland Pollinator Plan, and naturalcapitalireland.com for the Forum on Natural Capital. I actually signed up to that today myself. And Jane herself is on Twitter at Jane C. Stout. Thank you again very much for that, Jane. That's amazing stuff, isn't it? Now, it's nice to know that people are kind of studying this and coming up with plans. I hate finishing reports like this on things that we can do and then leaving it sounding positive. Because if we don't do the things that we know that we need to do, it won't happen and the situation won't improve.
Well, there is the campaign One Thing for Nature that we all can do very easily. So I suppose we could just do it.
So at the start of the growing season, any of you out there who are growers or have a garden or enjoy gardening or have an allotment, or if you're a farmer, have a think this year about what you can do for nature. And hopefully soon we'll be talking to the people from Hope Farm in the UK who have done some amazing work on this very thing, where they've just allowed awkward bits of the farm go back to nature, or actually it's managed, it's not just allowed go wild. They plant flowers for the pollinators and they leave the seed in for the birds, and they've seen dramatic increases in the diversity on the farm. But we better take an ad break, and coming up after the break, if you want to keep bees to do your bit, how you can learn all about those in Kilkenny. So we'll be back just after these. Text us on 086 353 7782.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're very welcome back to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I'm Francis Nesbitt and I'm here with Mags Morrissey, and we're live today, Friday from 4 to 5. So if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to send them in. You can text us on 086 353 7782 or drop us an email at any stage during the week, kitchengarden@crkc.ie. Few comments in, slagging off the wasps in the cider and slagging off the midges, people giving out about insects. But without them, we will die.
And without a balance of them, you know, like if you have loads of midges and no bats, you'll have kind of uncomfortable midges. But if you have plenty of bats, so if you've got bats roosting somewhere, leave them there. They'll control the midges in the summer. So it is all about balance. And
exactly that. And if
I saw them referred to as misunderstood creepy crawlies.
That's a nice way of looking at it.
Yeah, it is, it is. And you know, for years and stuff, you want to get insects out of your house and all the rest and stuff. You kind of dismissed their how useful they are. And they actually, like, ecology-wise, they're very useful, but also, like, they aerate the soil and stuff. Like, they're burrowing and digging, and they then will, you know, all the leaves fall and they lie on the ground and stuff. It's the insects come along and like beetles and that sort of thing, and they'll actually break those down, and they also fertilise the soil, and then they produce things like honey, wax, silk, very important economically too.
It's the wholesale slaughter of these things that really is the issue. So okay, you might grow a crop which suffers from a particular beetle or infestation from a particular type of pest, but rather than eradicate that pest or control that pest, the whole field is sprayed, you know, several times,
yes,
to kill everything. And then, of course, some passing insects pick up on that, or it drifts into a hedgerow and kills everything in the hedgerow, which...
or in our houses as well, in fairness. You know, I feel farmers are getting kind of a hard time these days with climate change and that. We're all responsible for killing insects in our houses and killing... aphids on the roses or whatever. So I think we all need to kind of take a bit of responsibility, don't we?
Yep, and think about it. A friend of this show, Tongi Dutelay, will tell you that if you look at a plant that's suffering from an aphid infestation or a scaly bug or any of these kinds of things, they tend to attack a plant that's unhappy. And if the plant was happy and vigorous, it could support one or two or a small population of these pests. You tend to notice them when the plant is unhappy and the population absolutely explodes of the pest, because it's able to get at them more easily. So that's true. Means the plant is under stress. You're growing it in the wrong place, or you're growing it badly. So mind the plant and it'll mind itself against the pests. Now, you're a member of the Mid Kilkenny Beekeepers Association, Mags, aren't you?
Yes, I am indeed. I'm a paid-up member, actually.
leading member, arranging the talks on a regular basis. And bees are the kind of the t-shirt insect, really, aren't they? The insect that everybody loves, except when it's buzzing around your picnic in the summer. But
well, yeah, you don't get bees doing that. Wasps, I suppose, do. But anyway, my bees are flying in and out. I actually went out to have a look at them this morning because I gave them some fondant, as I was telling you last week, was it? Whenever, because I was worried about them. But they don't seem to be bothering with it. So I actually think that's probably a good sign that they're actually not hungry and they're happy.
Good.
I wasn't sure whether to do it or not, but I went feared on the side of caution and did it. So, but anyway, there's a beekeeper. The course is starting next Wednesday, the 20th, in the Orchard Pub. I did this 2 years ago. Runs for 4 weeks and includes a practical demonstration. So you'll go out to the hives in Lavistown to have a look at the at actually how it all operates, which is very useful. And I did the course 2 years ago, I think it was, and I actually, it all sort of came together for me because I was hearing bits and pieces and picking up bits of information, but to be honest, I was a bit lost. But at least when you do the course, it's quite it's nicely structured and you really get a good idea of what you should or shouldn't be doing. So it's very useful, and it's really, I can't remember how much it is, but it's really good value.
It's €100 for the 4 weeks. So it's 4 Wednesday evenings between 7 and 9 in the Orchard Public House in Kilkenny. And that's running from Wednesday next, the 20th of February. And you can sign up and pay on the night, or you can visit the Mid Kilkenny Beekeepers page on Facebook and do a search for the event there. But it's It's amazing every year how many people sign up and do the course, 30, 40 people.
Possibly, yeah.
A fraction of them must eventually go on to keep bees, but loads of people have an interest in the bee and learning about its life cycle because it's fascinating.
It is fascinating, yeah. And I think it's a big thing to take on beekeeping, so to get your hive and all that set up. So I think you may do the course and it may be a couple of years down the road before you actually make the jump or get a swarm from someone or whatever. So it's and every year, actually the last talk, which was I was talking about last week, the rural one, there was a couple of new people who'd been to the course last year who'd come back this year. But yeah, it is fascinating, and you'll meet, you know, other people who are interested in bees as well. You might meet somebody who can give you a swarm of that. So it's definitely worth it if you've an interest at all. And even if you're not going to keep bees, it's a great way to just broaden your knowledge.
It's an amazing amazing value as well, because for the €100, you don't just get the 4 weeks of tuition on the Wednesday night between 7 and 9. You get a couple of visits to the hives that the association run out at Lavistown during late spring or early summer when it's warm enough to open up the hives. You get a membership of the association for a year.
Which is €70 anyway.
Which is €70 anyway. That includes insurance then for the year if you do go get bees. So you're insured against them harming anybody else or causing any damage. And you get 12 copies of Ambacara, which is the Irish Beekeeping Association's magazine. And that has everything in there from the beginner right through to the kind of PhD level beekeeper. Amazing value for £100.
Amazing. I must have a stack of 24 copies of that.
Have you read through them yet?
You seem to be read.
Well, the thing is,
I keep them really carefully, actually. They're all together, all in order, unread.
They don't go out of date, really,
no,
because the information
no.
that's in there, okay, it's February this year, you don't get around to reading it, but when you do, it'll still be valid in February of next year.
Yes.
And what I love about the course is that each of the 4 weeks are broken down into a particular theme. So the first week we'll be talking about the occupants of the hive. So everybody knows that there's a queen bee in the hive. How does the queen bee come about? Who else is in the hive? So who are the drones and what do they do? The workers, how long do they live? What's their life cycle? Are there specialised workers and so on? So that the actual society of the bee is covered at the start of the course, and that's really fascinating.
And there's a lot of terminology, actually. Mm. That was one thing that I found a bit difficult at the beginning. There's so much terminology. People would just like casually talk about brood boxes and brood this, that and the other. I actually had no idea what, you know, and you don't until it's all kind of explained kind of simply to you. And then you know what you're talking about. So it's definitely worth doing it.
Yeah, exactly. And like that's covered in one of the other sections, then all of the equipment that you might need and you might use. But the one that brought it all together for me, or the one where I often see people kind of do the, oh, yeah, okay, is in the third session where we talk about the beekeeper's calendar. So it starts the year in September, generally, is where the lecture starts, preparing for winter. And then it talks you through the hive during the year, what you should be looking out for. And even as an experienced beekeeper, so even if you're somebody who's been keeping bees for years, when you attend a lecture like that, it really kind of focuses the mind. And if I don't do that in May, then I will be in trouble with swarming later on, and so on. So that was the lecture that I really
I think liked. I might do it again, actually.
Yeah, well, I'll be going along to do the last lecture. I tend to do the one on harvesting and the products from the hive, and then that's split into two. And then we also talk about planting for the bees and how useful that can, or like plants that we can put in the garden that's of use to them. But it's really interesting. I generally go every year and I'm always learning something. Every time you go to a bee lecture, you learn something new.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I'd like to get the calendar from Melanie again, actually. That is quite useful.
Yeah. So that's the Mid Kilkenny Beekeepers Association and their Introduction to Beekeeping course, and that starts on Wednesday the 20th of February in the Orchard Public House in Kilkenny City, just off the Ring Road on New Orchard Road. It's €100 and you can pay on the first night, and that €100 goes for, or includes all of the things that we've already outlined: membership, insurance, the magazine and the four lectures and the visits to the hive. Or you can also book a place on the Facebook, the Mid Kilkenny Beekeepers Association Facebook page. You'll find that on facebook.com/Mid Kilkenny Beekeepers.
Talking about bees, I actually picked up some dried flowers earlier that are grown in Carlow. And you can buy them in Glossary and Goodies in Gorn.
They're
but,
lovely.
Yeah, and they're quite bee friendly, actually. Not right now that they've been dried, but a lady grows those in her own garden, and the company's called madaboutflowers.ie, and you can, she's selling now dried ones that she's dried from the summer and stuff. But really nice, actually. Nice to buy local flowers, not buying stuff that's been brought in from
Holland.
Yes, or further afield with lots of pesticides and all sorts on them. So, yeah.
That's just across the border in Carlow.
Just in the border, across the
border. It's not like you to be telling us about something that isn't in Tipperary, Max.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any flowers been grown in Tipperary at the moment. But anyway, maybe we should change that.
For next week, you might look it up.
There's a website anyway, madaboutflowers.ie, that I've been trying to log on to, that I can't. I don't know whether it's my phone or not.
Okay.
But so.
And they were in glossary and goodies.
Yeah.
Great job.
But they had some fresh ones and dried ones. I just got some dried ones today.
Very good. Now we might look at some jobs to do in the garden. Do you have any jobs lined up for this week?
Oh no, I actually am nearly exhausted from the garden this week. I need jobs for next week.
Well, you might be making your list for the next woofer that comes along.
Yeah, now I have to move to the veg garden, actually. That's the next little project. So I need to get the ground ready for some planting and that.
Do you have wisteria out at Hedgehog House?
Yeah, I do.
Time to do a bit of pruning on the wisteria.
Oh, yes, okay.
So you might cut back last summer side shoots to 2 or 3 buds to make sure that you get lots and lots of flowers on that. That's one of the jobs that needs doing around about now.
Okay.
Have any ornamental grasses out there?
I hate them.
You don't like ornamental grasses?
Yeah, I do. I do have a few, actually, at the back, near the orchard, actually. They actually didn't get a cut yesterday, but maybe tomorrow.
By now they look very, very kind of straggledy. And like, you've lots of the dead growth from last year. And while at the start of the winter or in really frosty conditions, that looks really nice when it's all covered in hoarfrost, or on a misty morning, it looks really nice. You're going to start getting the new growth coming through on those ornamental grasses now, and you want to get the old stuff out of the way. In some of them with the longer leaves, if you just reach down to the bottom and you kind of pull or kind of rake them with your fingers, the old growth breaks off very easily and comes out very easily. In others, just take the shears to them, so long as you're not cutting the top off any of the new growth.
Because
otherwise you'll end up with really unsightly kind of cuts on the tops of the foliage. So go at your ornamental grasses if you have any, and give them a clean up. And fuchsia. I love fuchsia. It's a beautiful, beautiful plant. I have some of it growing around the cottages. But now is the time to give that a prune as well. You want to take that down to 1 or 2 buds on every shoot. And that makes a huge difference to the volume of flowers. And it kind of keeps the bush a bit more compact.
I think fuchsias should really be just kept in West Cork.
In West Cork, on along the roads. I knew you'd make a reference to that. Along the roads in West Cork.
Yeah, where the in the world. It's beautiful down there, but I actually don't like it outside of that.
It really has made West Cork its home, hasn't it?
Yes,
in those mild conditions down there. Yeah. It's grown abundant in the hedgerows.
They've used it as a symbol, and the fuchsia brand, wasn't it, in West Cork?
Oh, kind of a foodie
brand that they had for a while. Yeah, maybe it's still in existence, I'm not sure. But
very good. Very well.
It does grow well, and it looks really nice. It looks fabulous in hedges like that. You'll often see it with that orangey flower, Lucifer.
Oh yeah, lots of Lucifer growing below it. All garden escapees down there.
Yeah, I suppose.
What I love about the fuchsia is watching the bees like to work it, and then some of the bees have learned, instead of pollinating the flower and going about it the hard way and trying to get the nectar out of the flower, like through the normal path, they just burrow a hole in the bottom and go in the side and nick the nectar that way.
Oh,
isn't that funny, isn't it?
Yeah,
not great for the poor old fuchsia now, or the pollination, but the bees have created a shortcut for themselves to get out there.
Oh, clever,
get out what they need. Now, maybe one more job. So, snowdrops. I've really enjoyed the snowdrops out at Croan. Absolutely gorgeous year for them. And the flowers, the bulbs that I lifted and divided a couple of years ago, were all in flower this year. And where I put down 2 or 3 bulbs from the split has already grown into a lovely big clump. Enjoy the flowers now, but as soon as the flowering is finished, while they're in the green, is the time to split and divide them. Don't wait for them to go dormant. It's brilliant because you know where they are. You can see them. There generally isn't much grass or growth around them. So once your snowdrops, you've enjoyed them and the flowers are gone, it's time to go out and dig them up, separate them gently with your hands. You don't want to go chopping at them with a spade or anything. Separate them gently with your hands and then take a clump of those and spread them further around the garden. And you may not, some of them may kind of give out next year. You may not get flowers on all of them, but the following year then you'll have just increased the amount of flowers that you have around the garden tenfold.
Cool. And the, you know, the Snowdrop Festival in Carlow, I think that's still running. It started on the 12th of this month. So there's still loads of snowdrops in Altamont.
Altamont, where we did the report from last year.
Yep.
A lovely, lovely place to visit.
And it's definitely worth, if you have a chance, it's definitely worth a visit for the snowdrops now.
Yeah, a gorgeous, gorgeous garden. Yeah, gorgeous garden. So go and enjoy them now.
This week is the week for it.
Great. Well, I want to leave us with a bit of music today. So we're out of time for another week in the Kitchen Garden. We hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, you can keep in touch with us during the week on Twitter at NesbitF or at Mags Morrissey or by email. You can email us at any stage during the week with questions or comments or suggestions for things we might cover on the show. kitchengarden@crkc.ie. And to listen back to a podcast of this or any of the other shows, you can visit thekitchengarden.ie and you can stream them there, or you can download them, or you can just tune in again to Community Radio Kilkenny City at the same time next week to hear myself and Mags and whatever guests we have on that week. Now, given that we were talking about insects and pollinators and so on this week, a little bit of music by an American lady called Hayley Hendricks and her song The Bug Collector. We'll see you next week.
Out to get you, and I digress, 'cause I must make you the perfect morning. I try my best to scoop the slugger out the window. Past life out to get you, and I digress, 'cause I must make you the perfect evening. I try my best to put the priest inside a jam jar. Out to get you.